Welcome to the third episode of the Patient Services Podcast at Anthony Nolan. My name is Billy and I'm the Patient Communication and Insight Coordinator. Throughout this series of podcasts, we hope to bring you insight and support into the experience of having a bone marrow or stem cell transplant. We'll be looking at what life before, during and after transplant can be like, talking to health professionals for tips and advice, and patients who've been there themselves will be sharing their stories and personal experiences with you. We hope you find them helpful and informative. Today I'm joined by Sheila Hegarty, a haematology counsellor working as part of the haematology, psychology and counselling team at University College London Hospital. Having a stem cell transplant is a life-changing event, and dealing with its impact on your everyday life can be a challenge. The emotional rollercoaster often described to us by patients who contact Anthony Nolan can be really hard to navigate without support and guidance. Today, Sheila will be talking to us about her experiences of supporting this specific patient group and giving us her expert insight into the psychological concerns experienced by transplant patients. Hello, Sheila. Thank you for speaking with us today. It's very generous of you to give up your time for Anthony Nolan. Can you start by telling me how you came to specialise in counselling for haematology patients?
Sure, and I'm very glad to be here to talk about this. Thank you for inviting me. I've been working at UCH for 12 years, and when I started, I was the only counsellor working in the department in haematology.
Okay.
Part of my role, I was asked to kind of develop the role within haematology across inpatients and outpatients and right through the journey. So that's happened over the years. We now have a much larger department. We are four in the team. So we have three counsellors, one psychologist, and a couple of trainees always there as well. And I think that reflects the complexity, really, of what people are going through.
Right. And the growing needs for that kind
Absolutely.
Of support.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are there any common psychological issues or concerns you've noticed in those patients that you see who go through transplant?
I think the most important thing to say first is that this is a huge and daunting experience for most people going through it.
Absolutely.
It comes on the back of having had a diagnosis and a lot of other treatment. And then facing this is daunting and is huge. So it's very natural and normal to feel a lot of things, to feel anxiety, to feel worried, to feel low, to have a range of emotions, really.
Yeah.
Which people experience and which are kind of common to most people, although people will experience them in different ways and at different times across that journey, really, from diagnosis right through treatment.
And are there specific concerns about the transplant process or elements of the transplant that you find that the patients you see want to talk to you about?
Yeah, I think that varies very much from person to person,
mm-hmm.
Which again is human, really, isn't it? But
yeah.
I think they range from people being very worried about the treatment itself and the impact of that. And people are told very clearly, I know, by the medical team in advance, that they're facing a lot and that there will be side effects. So people are aware of that and worried about that. They're also often worried about family, about partners,
okay.
children. Parents, and so are very aware of trying to protect them as well. But people are mainly concerned really about getting through this, about knowing this is going to give them a chance of life,
mm-hmm.
Of a cure. And so they want to do it, but are also aware of all that goes with it. So I guess in the beginning, there's often a lot of worry, but also hope about this will be very
potentially
positive.
Curative. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that changes along the way at different times and at different stages in the process. So worries will be different at different times.
Okay. Mm. So is there a time in the process, be it pre, during or post-transplant, that people tend to need the most support?
I think that varies again, as I said, from individual to individual. But I think one of the things that can surprise people quite a lot is that post-transplant, we get a lot of our referrals, and that's often when people need most support.
Okay.
Because although the beginning of the process is shocking, they've been through diagnosis, they're now facing this extra treatment, they're kind of they're on a journey, really. They're kind of told what they have to go through. They're aware they're going to be in hospital. So they hopefully make preparation for that. Mm-hmm. And certainly the staff, the clinical nurse specialists and so on, will help them with that.
Yeah.
So that has its own challenges. And then people are going through it, getting through that. But it's when it's often when they leave hospital. After a long period in, it can be weeks, can be longer. And going home, when people, relatives, friends are very excited and feeling people are coming through this. This is really good news. And actually, they're trying to readjust.
They're trying to
life
pick up,
afterwards.
Pick up the pieces of their life or to try and sort of form a new life.
Form a new life, and it'll be a very different experience often.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that people perhaps aren't prepared for.
Okay.
And I think it can be quite difficult to prepare people for that.
And so they come to you.
And so they come to us.
Because they weren't quite ready for it or didn't anticipate the impact it might have on them.
Yeah, and they'll often kind of come to see the medical team, come for their clinic checkups and talk about those kind of things that are still going on, maybe long-term fatigue, maybe feeling they just haven't the energy they used to have, feeling still unwell, settling to perhaps a different way of life.
Not maybe being at work. Or,
exactly.
Yeah.
Not being at work, maybe not being able to look after their children themselves in the same way yet.
Yeah.
So a long stage of recovery. And I think a lot of what we can do then is really put that in perspective and help people acknowledge that this is really difficult, but that actually they can get through it and that it's new, it's different, and it will be a different kind of a new normal, really, as we call it.
Yeah.
So that would be when we get a lot of people would come into our service and have some work done then. But we also see people in the beginning. Some people might be most anxious in advance and might want some help with kind of coping mechanisms for anxiety, coping skills. So that's one of the ways we'd be helping people prepare in advance. We also see people on the ward when people might be ill, very ill, or worried about family or bored or stuck in there and feeling isolated in a room on their own. So we'd be helping them through that stage as well.
Okay.
And of course, also see family as well.
That was my next question, actually. So do you see both patients and family? And, you know, if you do see family members, what kind of issues and concerns do you find that they have in comparison to the patient?
We do see both. We offer service to both. Sometimes we see people together we see couples. We might see people with their family in their family setup or with children. And I think there's a kind of bit of mutual concern from the patient and the family for each other. So the patient will also be will often be very concerned and worried about their family members, their children perhaps, their partner, as well as their own individual worries. But then also the relatives, you know, the partner, the parents, the children will be very worried and will not want to put anything on the patient, but also find it quite difficult often to express what might be going on for them because they just want to be there for their loved one, really. So they'll be talking about their own worries, but also their person, you know, the person who is the patient, their worries. And part of the work we would do then would be kind of elicit from them what their own worries are, how they see the future, the impact on their lives as well as on the patient.
Because it does have a really far-reaching impact.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, with the work that we do with patients, we try and prepare them.
Yeah.
So understand that the support network is incredibly important to a patient.
Sure, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so do you routinely see patients pre-transplant?
Not routinely, I wouldn't say.
Okay.
Although I think it's something that's increasingly becoming evident is quite important.
Yeah.
Because although people are given a full rundown of what to expect, I don't think they're quite given a full picture, a full understanding of the psychological impact and the emotional impact on them, you know, of being isolated and of how they can build on their own existing resources.
Right.
To get them through that stage, which is what I'd like to do. We have done a survey with our patients in UCH.
Okay.
People who are post-transplant and way post-transplant, people at different stages. And one of the things they felt was really largely that they hadn't been emotionally and psychologically prepared enough. Physically, they felt they had, but not psychologically. They felt it would be helpful. So it's something we're working with the medical team to try and see if we do half a day.
And ideally, is that something you'd like to do?
I think that would be very helpful. Yeah. From our team, we see that as being very helpful. And people usually have a bit of run-in time to a transplant, so there's time to do that. And I think it could help people build on their own resources and prepare themselves really for what's ahead.
Yeah, and take back a bit of control of it in that sort of preparation psychologically. I think that's definitely something that's echoed in the work we do with patients, that people often do say, as you've just said, that they didn't feel psychologically prepared. Mm. And that's something that people come to us with also.
Because I think, as you say, that lack of control is something that's very big, and people will be ill through that process. And to just have some charge of something is so helpful.
Yeah. It lays the foundation for what they're sort of preparing themselves for.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what kind of local support you would refer your patients to?
I think that's a good question, because I work in central London. Mm-hmm. We have a very well-resourced centre. We have patients coming from a long way away. And whilst they're with us, they have a good service. We're lucky, really. Often people going back home, it is more difficult, I have to say. Now, we as a team carry on. We will do telephone sessions with people.
Okay.
So we can offer that. The other thing we do is look for people, for services and resources locally. There may be support groups in the local area. We would liaise with the GP if we felt that was important. So we will do that liaison work or look up other services for people. But it's not always easy.
At UCLH?
We run a support group for all haematology patients. So we don't specifically have a bone marrow transplant support group, but we have a general one which covers all haematological conditions. And we meet once a month.
Okay.
For a couple of hours, and then the group themselves go off and have a meal afterwards, which is very nice because it means for them they have people who understand to talk to, and then they go off and do something social.
Yeah.
But from within that resort, you know, connections are built up and people can really link up and have very useful conversations and help each other with different resources that they have used themselves to get by.
And so how does it work having, as you say, it covers the broad spectrum of haematology? Does it work quite well having some transplant patients, some not transplant patients in that group?
In my experience, it works very well.
Okay.
Sometimes people want something more specific. Okay. So we might have somebody in on that particular issue. But usually it works well and people mutually support. It's very much really, I'm facilitating it, but it's very much about mutual support. And so people who have a more chronic condition may be very helpful to people who have more acute, where they can kind of see each other's perspective and gain from each other. And certainly I would say friendships have built up out of that and a lot of respect for each other's position and a kind of greater understanding of the fact that there can be different difficulties, but humanly people can help each other.
And do you think everyone having a transplant should have access to your kind of support?
I think a lot of people don't need our support, but I think people should all be aware of it. And I think the most important thing really is to let people know that it's, as I said really earlier on, it's very natural and normal to have a lot of feelings of anxiety, fear, worry, etc., going into a process like this. And so that people are aware of it. So it kind of becomes part of a conversation that makes it acceptable.
Yeah.
So that if people do need this support, it's okay to ask for it. It's okay to say, you know, I'm feeling this thing. I'd like to talk to somebody. That becomes much more as natural, really, as seeing the doctor.
Yeah.
As natural as having your nurse.
Mm-hmm.
As natural as having your temperature done. Yeah. That this is something that's part of the process as well.
Okay. And why do you think, if you come across this at all, why do you think that some patients or family members are reluctant to access psychological support?
It certainly is something we experience. And I think for a lot of people coming into this, they would never really go near a psychologist or counsellor.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it may mean something like, oh, what's wrong with me? I must have mental health problems. Am I mad? It's a stigma, definitely. So we would often like to see people just to kind of, in the beginning, explain a bit about our service, but say, you know, initially a chat, and people will often take to it. So I think people are worried from that point of view as a patient.
Okay.
And once, my experience is, once you get over that barrier, people really do use the service very well.
And see it as a talking, coping.
Definitely. Yeah. And see it as adding to their toolkit, really, of resources and their own, and them allowing them to be more autonomous mm-hmm. and more independent because they can build up their own resources.
Yeah.
And from the relative or family point of view, I think they're just so holding everything together for the patient and worried about if they start talking, what will they open up and will they be yeah. able to cope?
Because there's a lot of responsibility and onus on the person who isn't ill yeah. to keep, as you say, to keep things
definitely,
going.
Definitely. Yeah. So I think we would be very aware of that,
yeah.
Working with people, that we would, you know, want to support them and acknowledge with them that they do have a lot to hold together and do have mm. a lot on their plates as well.
But they have to take care of themselves in order to yeah. achieve that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
What advice would you give to patients who are about to go through or are going through a transplant about supporting themselves psychologically?
I suppose for me, the most important thing to do is say that this is your time and you really have to look after yourself. For a lot of people, I think they would say, I'm being selfish. You know, I need to look, it might be somebody who generally looks after other people yeah. or I don't want to put this on my family. And I would say, this is important. You have to look after yourself right now and be kind of, if you like, selfish about that, because that's the only way you're going to get through this. And that's actually helpful for everyone. And it's most helpful for friends and family to know how they can be helpful. So the more you can let people know what helps me, mm-hmm. then the more other people like to help and want to help but don't really know what to do. I think I always work with people in terms of their own, what I call, toolkit of resources. So helping people, whatever that may be, maybe ways they've come through adversity in the past. It may be that they enjoy, I don't know, going for a walk, reading, music. So any of the things they enjoy, building on that, what was enjoyable about that? What can you use from that to get yourself through this time? Being aware that they're going into a room for a period of time in a hospital, bring with you whatever might be comforting, whatever might be supportive.
Yeah.
But be very clear as well that really you're going to be not well for a while and you need to look after yourself and let people know that you can let them know, but that they mustn't really make demands of you. So people can find that very difficult to do. And I know for us, we often come across people at any stage through a transplant where that has to be reiterated, really. And again, when they go home.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, when people have a diagnosis, it's a huge shock, as you yeah. say. And then oftentimes they move into transplant quite quickly. Mm. And before any of that happened to them, they had a life and they mm. had responsibilities and they had a role within their family, within the workplace. And it must be so difficult mm. to let go of all of that. Mm. But as you say, the focus needs to be on them mm. and mm. getting better.
And there is an acknowledgement in that, as from what you've said, isn't there, of the loss of that? Mm. Now, hopefully a lot of that comes back, albeit maybe in different ways at times. But there is a loss. There's a change and there's some importance. There's a lot of importance, I think, about acknowledging that and helping them know that they can also get through this
yeah.
and they have a huge amount of resource. And that will be hugely varied from person to person. But, you know, there's no rule book for this. There's very much about what helps you, what helps you when it's difficult. And let's build on that.
So my last question today is, how essential is your role in post-transplant recovery?
I think it's hugely essential. I mean, I've certainly had a referral, for example, for a patient who was 6 years post-transplant.
Okay.
And part of that was he was having some ongoing physical difficulty, but that had also impacted on his life
yeah.
more broadly and on how he felt about himself. And that was hugely important. And we did some really valuable work together, which he certainly has acknowledged. So I think it's almost, as I said earlier, I think it's almost at that point that I feel we're of most use.
Yeah.
Because there's that huge adaptation mm-hmm. to a different life. And I think often when people are very ill and are diagnosed initially, there's the shock. Then there's getting through the treatment and supported in that by the medical and nursing staff. And then there's afterwards and it's, well, now what? What do I do now?
Yeah.
And it's at that stage that mentally and emotionally people are beginning to process what's happened and kind of moving from a shock to, whew, what was that all about?
Yeah.
And really being aware of the impact, because, of course, that diagnosis and those discussions about treatment, it's all about getting through this and living. But later on, it's, well, how do I live? And what is my new time like and how do I manage that? And just kind of, I guess, letting the plate settle after the earthquake, really, yeah. It feels to me afterwards, when there's a bit more space for that. It's kind of like the mind has had a time to catch up with what the body has gone through, really.
Yeah. And yeah. I suppose, you know, there are some people post-transplant who live with chronic side effects, such mm-hmm. as chronic fatigue and, as you say, physical symptoms. And so there is a huge period of adjustment mm-hmm. and you're suddenly away from the hospital mm. and away from all of the sort of support and, you know, people to talk to yeah. you have at those earlier stages. Yeah. So I can really see how post-transplant it's really essential to know that there is people like yourself mm. that they can access.
Yes, and I think to begin to build up confidence again mm. in the fact that, well, confidence in your body, in your life, in the new way, and even with side effects. You know, fatigue, graft versus host disease, the different things people may experience. Yeah. Even with that, actually, I can work this out. And how do I best do that? Yeah.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today. It's been really interesting to hear more about the work that you do.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you.
Before we sign off, I just want to tell you about some of the ways Anthony Nolan provides other kinds of support. For listeners who feel they might need some guidance managing their emotional well-being, you can find more information and resources available to order for free through our website, www.antoninolan.org. Some patients find that connecting with others who've been through transplant can improve how they feel in themselves. For online support, you can join our Patients and Families Forum to talk to other people like you. We also offer a peer support telephone service where you can speak to a transplant recipient who's at least 2 years post-transplant by phone. If you'd like to find out more about this and other ways we can support you and your family, please contact the patient team at patientinfo@antoninolan.org or call 0303 303 0303 for a chat. Thank you for listening today.